Aged just 20, Lily Ives Campion is widely regarded as being one of the most exciting upcoming talents in English women's rugby. However, as with so many guests we've had on the show, if it wasn't for one seemingly innocuous moment, she may have never even tried the sport. Since her chance beginning in rugby, Lily has gone from strength to strength, making her Premiership Women's Rugby debut for Loughborough Lightning, aged just 17, and joining the senior England squad for training camps this season, including ahead of the upcoming Women's Six Nations. We speak to Lily about her journey so far, including leaving home aged just 16 to combine studying and playing, and also discuss the future of the game, her role as an ambassador for Looseheads, and why she is so excited for what's still to come for women's sport. So welcome, Sports Spill listeners, and as regular listeners will know, we are huge fans of women's rugby on this podcast. We have interviewed many players from across the home nations, and today I'm delighted to be joined by one of the brightest talents in English women's rugby at the moment. Welcome to the podcast, Lily Ives Campion. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
We're very excited to speak to you as well. And once again, thank you to Talent Athlete Group for helping to set up this podcast. So Lily, we speak to you at an exciting time. We're not too far away from the Women's Six Nations starting. We're in the middle of the Men's Six Nations, in the middle of the Premiership Women's Rugby season. How's everything been going for you in 2023-24 so far?
Well, it's been quite an exciting year so far. And I think that, you know, a lot's been going on. I think at the moment we've got a lot of really good rugby going on in terms of the Prem being on every weekend. And I think that there's some really good coverage of that over on TNT. And I think that, you know, rugby's been going well, and especially at Loughborough now, having a good season. I think that we're coming off the back of quite a hard season last season. So I think now we're really trying to find ourselves playing rugby. We're not there yet, but I think that we've done really well so far. And I think that we've got some really good aspirations in the future with that.
You mentioned there the coverage on TNT, so that's the first time a deal like that has been struck for women's domestic rugby. I guess, how did you feel when that came through, and have you noticed an impact? Have you noticed more people sort of watching your games, maybe obviously not necessarily in the stadium, but have you sort of heard people talking about it more and sort of seeing more clips and stuff on socials?
So I think it's actually a really brilliant partnership, and I think that in terms of kind of aligning with how the men's, I suppose, how you can the viewership of the men's game, I suppose that's everything that's on TNT. And then however, so we have one game a week through, so there's like four games a weekend, one out of the four games will get played on TNT. And I think in terms of that, and I think of the coverage of that, it's brilliant. And I think that for all people who are clicking onto TNT and wanting to watch, I think that day, I think having the option to watch us is brilliant, because I know people that, or I've known, spoke to people who, you know, have seen that our game's on, so clicked in, probably never would usually do that. I think that's absolutely brilliant. I think just the one thing would be like how, because I think last season we had a lot of things where everything was put on YouTube, basically. Everything was on YouTube and or on the website. And then my mum, like my parents who don't have TNT, who didn't have TNT, would just log on there and they could watch this game, they could watch all the games. I think that's really the one thing that I would say it probably lacks a little bit, is actually the viewership of having how accessible it is. And I think, obviously, because it's a paid subscription. However, like saying that, I think it's been absolutely brilliant for the game in terms of, you know, that viewership, and actually the coverage that the game gets when we have TNT is brilliant. And I think that social media part of it has been really good. And I think there's been a lot of, like, I've seen that, and it feels like to me there's a lot more on social media and a lot more clips and a lot more coverage of those games that are on TNT. So that's good.
And I don't know if it's something you've ever thought about, but how is it for you as a player preparing for a match, but then knowing that it's being broadcast on a major platform, as you say, sort of, it is a pay-per-view platform. So maybe not quite as accessible as YouTube, but you've got like professional cameras, like you've got pundits in the stadium. Did you ever think about that, or do you just get on with the game?
Well, I think the one way I'd say I think about it is the night before a game, where I have a great fake tan routine, I think is probably a good one. That's probably a good place to start, knowing that I'll be on TNT. But I think it's one of those things where you've just kind of, the game is the game at the end of the day. And I think that that's the thing you got to focus on. I think there is a lot more coverage, obviously, when you get there, when you're getting off the bus, like cameras everywhere. But I actually feel like I do forget about it. I think other than just, you know, prepping for the game, I think that it's just brilliant to actually have a platform for people to watch. So if you can't come down to the game, that people and families are able to watch it. I think, yeah, I'd probably say I do forget that they're there, that it's on TNT. For example, our game on Friday against Bristol, we forgot. Basically, once you get there, like, you kind of just kind of get into game mode, and that's that. So I, yeah, probably just speaking for myself a little bit there, because I'm sure that people probably, there's probably different views on it. I suppose that some people might get nervous, but I just kind of forget, really.
And how much, in your opinion, obviously you've only been playing a few years, has the league changed in the last few years, especially in terms of the professionalisation and also the competitiveness? Because when it first started, it was Sarries, Quins, pretty much the top two the whole time, whereas now you've got Gloucester, you've got Exeter, yourselves at Loughborough, currently fifth in the table, like not too far off fourth place. How much has changed, in your opinion?
Well, so I've been playing, so I got my first Premiership cap when I was 17, against Sarries, actually, a few years ago. And I think since then, if we look at the league this year and how competitive the table is, it's ridiculous. And I think that is so good for the game. And I think that that's the, you know, the one aspect of the game we have in this country is that the league is so competitive. And I think that instead of there just being, you know, your go-to top two teams, top three teams, actually the whole league near, like, has the capability of doing that. And I think that especially, so the top five of the table is so competitive in the fact that there is, if you look at it, there's not many points between everyone, really. It just is a week by week basis of who's moving. And I think especially with, like, the bottom five of the table, I think the competition between that is just brilliant. And I think that it's probably one of the first years where we've had definitive competition. And I think that the league being so competitive is great. And I think that only builds the rugby standard that we're all playing, but it also, in terms of people wanting to view the game, it's not just exam. It's not just, you know, this team's guaranteed to win. It's, you're actually getting really good, like, competitive matches, which I think is also really good.
And you mentioned they made your league debut at 17. That's very young in rugby terms. How was that for you?
No, that is quite young. And then, so that was only 3 years ago now, like 3 years ago. So it wasn't that long ago. No, that I remember that day being, because it was actually in COVID, so there was no one there. And I remember just, I was really nervous. So I came to Loughborough College to do my A-level. So I was staying in Loughborough College accommodation, so, which is literally, well, down the road from where I live now anyway. And I remember just, like, waking up that morning, just being like, oh my, like, this is, like, I've got to go out here. My family can't be here. Yeah, I've got to play against, it was Saracens at the time. And I think that was when we had, it was like around this time period, actually. It was in April, I can't remember what year it was. And the international had gone away to play in the Six Nations, so gave me the opportunity to play. But there was no, like, Premiership Cup or anything like that at that point. It was still, like, the league games. But for me, I can remember that being a really, you know, daunting moment. And I think that, but I think once I ran onto the pitch, I was fine. And after the game, I felt really good. I felt amazing. I was like, wow, like, I can't believe I just did that.
Did the game itself go pretty well as well?
I think, you know, I can't quite remember, which is awful, but I know we didn't win, but I know that I remember the game being really fun, because it was on, actually, on the Astro here at Loughborough, which we don't really play here anymore. And no, I remember it just being brilliant fun, and I just loved every bit of it. And I think it was just being able to wear the kit for the first time was brilliant.
It's quite a eye-catching kit to wear as well, isn't it?
I love it. I think it's great. No, that was probably one of the best things, was the kit. And me, actually, I suppose at 17, I was like, all I want to do is put it on. And I was watching everyone, and that, you know, we had some really influential people in the team at the time, and just to train with them as well. So the fact I actually got to wear the kit was brilliant, I thought, anyway.
Fast forward only 3 years, and this season, as well as continuing to play for Loughborough, you've also been part of England training squads throughout the season so far. If you can recall, how did you sort of first learn of being selected for a training squad, and how has the process been for you so far?
Well, I think, so I've been a part of the under 20 squad for a few years now. And I think that, so at the start of this season, it was announced that me and five other people got transition contracts, which I think have just been really brilliant in terms of, like bridging the gap between like 20s and roses and being able to bring players in. So I found out about that in summer. I was actually sitting in a 24-hour exam when I found out about that. So yeah, that was fun. And then, so we found out about that and then went into preseason, had a really, really good time in preseason. I think there was a lot of like personal development in terms of not just rugby, but like genuine personal development that I had over that period of preseason. So I came out of that, but that was a really, really great experience. And then, yeah, then found out about the, how did I find out about the, yeah, so the squad got posted on the chat. And then I remember seeing it and I was like, wow. That's exciting. So yeah, that's how I found out about that. And I think that I'm just really excited to just, you know, grab this opportunity and see where I can go with it. But I also, you know, you can't credit the actual group, the Red Roses group. I think it's unbelievable. And I think the players in there are some of some serious quality. And I think I can only go in and learn from everyone in there. So I'm really excited to do that.
I mean, it's one hell of a squad to come in and train alongside, given everything they've achieved. Even in the last year or so, Six Nations and the W15 victories, what was it like for you, sort of, for that first session, turning up there with these superstars of the game?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I was so scared. So I would say that I'm quite a chatty person, and I was mute. I was so nervous going into the camp. I was really, really nervous. And I just remember arriving on the first day and there was a couple of the younger girls that I knew and we all were just clinging on to each other because we were so nervous. But soon enough, like that went because everyone was so welcoming and I thought that was just like amazing. And I think that everyone was so kind and welcomed us all into the squad. And yeah, so the nerves didn't last too long, but they were definitely there.
And what have been the lessons that you've learned from these players, not necessarily just on the pitch, but anything off the pitch as well? What have they passed on to you?
Just how diligent they all are. And I think that in terms of, you know, the off the field stuff, for example, like recovery and reviewing everything we're doing, I think that everyone is so diligent in that aspect that like it's really like I really like find it interesting to see that. And I think that's probably something that I've reciprocated and taken away from that situation is actually through the depths of like detail you'd go into things and how you're going to review something and stuff like that. So I think yeah, that's definitely something I probably learned from there, but also like how in depth you can view that or like the questions that you ask, things like that.
And how good have they been with you sharing their knowledge, sharing their time, as well as doing their full-time training and everything as well?
Unbelievable. Like they've been so unbelievable. So for example, over pre-season, Zoe Allcroft, she really took me under her wing and she was amazing. And I think that obviously we're the same position, but she went like out of her way to help me. And I think that, you know, credit to her because that was the way she did that was so helpful. And I think obviously coming into that environment as well, I think that it was just really nice for someone to actually just reach out and be like, if you need to chat or like, if you've got any questions, just ask me. And I think that then really like gave me some confidence then to go into sessions and, you know, perform and then try and be involved in that squad. But she was like a really like pivotal person in there because she really reached out to me and helped me out.
And how does that make you feel when, yeah, someone who, as you say, you're the same position as potentially one day could be vying for the same spot in the starting 15, but they're going out and helping you. How does that make you feel?
I didn't see it like that. And I still don't see it like that, I suppose. I think that, yes, we're the same position, but I think in terms of training camp and getting the best out of what we can do, I think that I generally felt it's really hard to explain actually, because at that point, I just wanted a little helping hand, someone to be like, oh, you're doing okay. Like, just keep going. Like, I think it was really confidence driven at that point. So she was really helpful in that aspect. And I think that she's an unbelievable player in herself. So I was probably a little bit starstruck as well, if I'm going to be honest at the start.
And you mentioned there you are one of six players offered the training contract to help with that transition. I guess how big is the step up in terms of just training from sort of what you've been used to training with these guys? Is it still quite a big jump or has it been made easier?
No, I would say it was still a big jump. And I think in terms of everything's a lot quicker. Everything's a lot quicker. And I think physicality wise, that's where the big jump is. And I think that probably something I struggled with a little bit in preseason because I really wasn't expecting No, I was expecting it, but as in like, do you only do something and then you realize you're like, oh, okay, this is what it is. But no, I think in terms of like that physicality and speed of play actually is so much quicker than probably anything I've played in the Prem. But however, to be involved in that was great. And I think that it has just been great.
And I guess not just since you've joined them with the pre-season camps and the camps, but previously when you're part of the England under 20 setup, you would have watched this team performing and succeeding as well. Sort of, yeah, what's it been like to watch them, and does it give you that drive to, want to be out there and joining them and experiencing that success with them in the future?
Well, I actually, so on the, when they played France at Twickenham and they won the Grand Slam. So I went and I sat in the crowd that day and I bought tickets and I bought tickets when you walk down past, you walk down with everyone into the stadium and I met some family there and I was sat in the second tier, watched the game. And honestly, it was actually just to be there in that moment. And at this point, I had no idea about anything. And I was just, it was just, I was like, oh, I'm just gonna go watch. I think that would be brilliant. That actually was a really big moment for me because I was really put into perspective of how big this group is and how amazing they did. And I think that from sitting and watching that what brought this drive into me to be like, I want to be on the pitch. I don't want to be watching them. I want to be on the pitch. And I think that it was just a really surreal day. And I think the energy and the people and how happy everyone was. And I think I remember just walking around and just seeing, and especially I think the walk to the stadium, there was like people singing. There was, it was the, it, I, so walking to Twickenham, like the difference between walking to the men's game and to this game was just so different. And it was just amazing though, like everything about it was amazing. So to be able to watch them at that point and now actually be a part of that squad, it's just unbelievable. And yeah, that was a really, really great day.
And since then, have you sort of given any thought to what it would be like to pull on that shirt, step out there and play for England? Or are you just keeping your head down and focusing and sort of, without wanting to sound too cliche, sort of taking each day as it comes?
Yeah, to be fair, that's something I've not. I'm probably just going to take everything as it comes. I think I've not particularly looked or thought about what it's going to be like because you never know because it might not be in this campaign. It might be a year down the line, or if that makes sense. So I think it's like, I think it's just one of those things. You've just got to take each camp as it comes, everything that you do, and then when that moment comes, and if that moment comes, is to really perform when it comes to it.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
And it's such a big 12, 18 months for women's rugby in this country with Six Nations, first of all, just around the corner, and then World Cup coming up very soon as well. Is that something that the squad is thinking about, not just sort of the day by day, but then how to continue growing and progressing and taking advantage of these big moments and continuing to show the world that you're setting the standard and everybody needs to try and catch up with you?
Yeah, I think having a home World Cup in 18 months' time is just what a great opportunity, and it couldn't have probably fallen at a better time. I think that coming from the back of New Zealand and the coverage the World Cup had there, and I think that coming into another one, I think it's only going to grow the game in this country, and I think that it's going to grow the viewership, and I think it's going to be an unbelievable event, and I'm really excited to see actually the growth of the game coming up to the World Cup and also post the World Cup, which is probably the point where I am, and I'm actually going to be really fortunate to see that and be a part of that. And I think it's really exciting, and I think that there's a lot of opportunity around this. And I think in terms of like club involvements and then hope like growing the community game, I think that it would be really brilliant to see how that works.
And just going back to what you mentioned as well, not only was that Grand Slam game at Twickenham special for you because of the drive it gave you as well, but also for the spectacle of women's rugby as well. From what I remember, it was a really good crowd that day, really good atmosphere, seeing England winning a Grand Slam at Twickenham. How special was that as well, given that just a few years back, that would have been a very it would have looked very different for women's rugby.
No, I think it was a really surreal experience. And I think that having a record crowd there, you know, was just another driver. And I think that that stadium could easily be sold out at the World Cup. And I think that's just one of the key drivers. And I think that everyone who was there, it was a massive spectacle for families, teams. There was coaches of teams turning up. And I think that that's only going to grow bigger. And I think the game is only going to get fonder of that. And I think that that's really important and really exciting to happen over the next 18 months.
Yeah, it's, I mean, women's rugby, as women's sport as well, women's team sport in particular, has been on such a meteoric rise over the last few years, and it feels permanent. You are, as we've already discussed, right at the beginning of your career. What's it like, I guess, being a young woman in professional rugby at the moment? Does it almost feel as though, I know, like the sky is the limit and anything is achievable, and is it just really exciting to be involved with it?
I think the one thing about it, I find it, it's exciting, but it's also really challenging at the same time. And I think that the reason I find it a little bit challenging, obviously, is because I'm managing my studies at the same time. And I think that what's exciting is that the future is kind of unknown a little bit, in the fact of we don't know what the game, where the game is going to be like in 10 years. We can predict it, but we don't obviously don't know where that's going to be. And I think that I'm actually in a really fortunate position where I'm going to be involved in that growth of the game and actually be able to see the game unfold itself and see what it can actually become and what it can produce and how the league's going to be and, you know, things like that. And that's what I'm really excited for, I think, is the fact that I can provide opportunities for younger people to have people to look up to people, and in terms of seeing where the game's going to grow and having role models and just seeing the actual trajectory of women's rugby, and not even just women's rugby, just women's sport in general. I think the next 10 years is really pivotal in terms of that growth of the game for all games. And I think that's just really exciting. I think at this point is to see where that's going to go and how that trajectory is going to look. And I'm really excited to actually live in that and live through this growth of that.
We've spoken to, as I said, many rugby players before, and they've all said that one of the great things about rugby is that it's, anyone can play rugby, any shape, size. Is that something that, as well, I guess rugby, women's rugby has had unfairly a stereotype attached to it over the last, certainly when I was growing up, hopefully not so much when you were growing up. But yeah, I guess, is that something you're really keen to change and keen to show to everyone, that it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, that rugby will welcome you?
Yeah, and I think that's why I love the game. And I think that I started playing rugby in school, and the reason I started playing rugby in school was because one of my best friends at the time forced me into it, saying there was a, you know, we need someone to play this weekend, will you come and do it, or you will come do it, because he needed numbers. So that's how I got involved in the game. But I think in terms of that stereotype, I think that it's just that it's changing, and I think the outlook of the game is changing, and that's just brilliant to see. And I think that, you know, if you look at the England women's squad now, that we have, there's so many different people, and I think that's just, and everyone is so accepted for everyone, and I think that everyone has a role model. It doesn't matter who you are, everyone has a role model that they can look up to, and I think that's what's really important, and I think that that's what we've just got to continue.
You made a comment earlier, actually, that is really interesting. So for context, my sort of main sport is cheerleading, so very much a performance-based sport. And you mentioned the comment about like the fake tan that before a game and stuff like that. That's the sort of thing I would expect, or stereotypically expect to hear in cheerleading, but not necessarily think about for rugby. But I guess, yeah, is it just that celebrating? And I think it's been seen in a lot of sports as well. Like, women are, if they want to be, they've got a space to be really glamorous, or they've got a space to not be as glamorous as well. The thing is that almost breaking that stereotype as well, that you can look however you want as long as you're comfortable. I think is that quite important for you as well?
Yeah, I would think that. And I think that, yeah, so like I said about me fake tanning, like I play a game with a full face of makeup on sometimes. I just feel like you feel good, you play good. And it doesn't matter what other people think, because that's how I feel. And that's, if I want to go out and perform, then I want to feel the best with how I feel. Don't get me wrong, some games I am not doing anything like that, because I'm just going out there and I'm just playing. But I think what's brilliant is just that it doesn't matter. Like, I think that it really doesn't matter about anything. I think as long as you're happy and you can feel like you can perform and you're really happy in yourself and that's all that matters. But what's great about the game is everyone's just so accepting of that. It doesn't matter. Like that's what I think, that you can just be who you want to be. And that's just why I think it's such a great game. And I think that everyone involved would probably similarly say the same.
And with the sort of growing following, growing social media coverage, growing TV coverage of women's rugby, are you finding that you're getting a lot more people sort of supporting you, or are you finding that there are some people or some dinosaurs who are still saying, oh, women shouldn't be playing rugby, or women shouldn't be playing like that? Or do you think that that's disappearing and that ultimately most people are accepting of you and how great you all are?
I do think it's there, but I do think it's really disappearing. And I think that the longer that we can perform and put on these great performances and play at these massive stadiums with big crowds, I think the less that that's going to happen. And I think that slowly that we can see that happening. But I think things like the World Cup coming up, and we've got a Six Nations tournament coming up, and WXV, I think just keep putting on these shows and putting on these big performances, and then just playing rugby like how we play rugby, I think that people will still understand that, because I think this is such a brilliant game. And I think that the rugby that's played, especially so within the Red Roses, I think is just really pivotal in changing that viewpoint.
And how, it's something we've briefly mentioned before, but how important do you think the use of social media is for showing just how skillful, powerful you all are? Because obviously you can see to a certain extent from broadcast cameras, but you know, if you've got someone pitch side filming you, if you're at training, showing what you're lifting in the gym, the hits you're making in training, how important do you think that as a tool is for showcasing to people that actually, yeah, women's rugby is phenomenal, and these are incredibly talented athletes.
Social media is great, isn't it? And I think the use of, I think it's so widely used now. And I think you got the platforms, for example, like Instagram, TikTok, and Snapchat, and all things like this. And I think they all show, I think what you can post on all of them show something a little bit different. And I think that's what's really brilliant. I think some of the content that could be posted on TikTok is probably potentially something that's a bit more, you know, you can have a bit more of like a backstory into something, or having a, whereas Instagram, you can have content which is very directed to that audience. And I think that it's actually brilliant to showcase this over all platforms, because I think you can really delve into the depths of what an athlete is, and also what a rugby athlete is, and how that looks being a woman. And I think that there's some really, like, it's really interesting to see. For example, you can go on TikTok and you could see like a day in the life of a student athlete, and then you could see that aspect of things. Yet you can touch it, go over to Instagram, and you can see pictures from games. And I think that social media is so good in terms of being able to see that. And also, if you're trying to research the game or look into the game, and I think that, so for example, if you've not played before but you want to play, so you want to have a look at, yeah, you might not Google it, you might not Google the team, you might want to look at people within the sport. I think you have the social media is a really great platform to do that and to see actually what that looks like.
If you want the latest Sportspiel episodes and updates direct into your email inbox, then subscribe to our newsletter. You can find a link to do so in the show notes of this episode.
And coming back to you, you've already mentioned that you got into rugby initially because your friend was going and sort of dragged you along. What, I guess if you can think back, what were your thoughts ahead of that session, and how did you find it? Were you immediately drawn to rugby, or did it take a little bit more persuading?
Before I was actually playing rugby, I had a horse and I was horse riding. And so I think, so before, so when I did that, I was like, okay, you know, it's a weekend. I probably won't go out riding on that Sunday, I suppose, because it's really rainy, or it's, the weather's supposed to be bad anyway. So, okay, went down to the pitch, and it took me 5 minutes on pitch to realize how much I loved it. It was pouring down with rain on a really, really muddy pitch. And I remember, just, and I was, when I came off the pitch, I was covered, head to toe, covered in mud, but I loved it. I loved everything about it, and I just haven't looked back since. And I think that it obviously clearly didn't take me very long to love it. And I think that that's something that, because I loved it so much at club, and I loved what we were doing at club, that we brought it into school, and we started playing at school, and which meant a lot more of my friends would play, and which made it even more enjoyable because we'd all be playing together. And I think that, yeah, it really, really clearly didn't take me that long to love it.
Do you remember anything in particular about rugby that particularly made you love it so quickly, or was it just the whole experience?
I think it was actually, it was the contact side of things. And I think that I did just really enjoy tackling people and running and, you know, and I think that's something that I enjoyed enough to want to continue to play it really. And then, you know, I made quite a big life decision at 16 to go away and live at college away. So I said, like I said before, I went to Loughborough College to do my A levels. So I moved away from home at 16 and I lived in accommodation for 2 years. That I think that, you know, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't have made such a big decision like that. And I think that, I suppose that just proves how much I loved it and I really wanted to try as hard as I can to play. So yeah.
How was that move for you? Was it daunting? Were there doubts, or was it you set in your mind that I need to do this in order to achieve what I want to achieve?
It was quite daunting because I was when I moved, it was COVID actually. So it was so there was a lot of restrictions when I got there, which is a bit different to what it was like previously. But in terms of, I think obviously you're quite nervous as a 16-year-old going into accommodation. I think that, as rightly so, you would be. And I think that, however, the people I lived with were also athletes, but athletes in different sports. So I lived with three GB handball players because there being a handball program at Loughborough College. And I think that we all got on really well and we all had a really great relationship. So that made it a lot easier because we. And what was nice actually was because we weren't all from the same sport. And I think that they had it. So their day to day looked a bit different to mine, but it was really interesting to see the crossovers and how their sport worked probably differently to mine and how they would manage that.
And I'm given my connections with a rival university to Loughborough. I know you're talking about Loughborough College, but I hate to praise them, but obviously Loughborough is a hub and so many different sports based there. And I guess sort of at 16, were you interacting with not just the handballers, but were you interacting with quite a lot of different athletes and sort of learning things off them, or was it mainly
So
just?
at the so within the accommodation actually, there's a lot of athletes from a lot of different sports that would come to the accommodation and just to play for the college and be within the college environment. So, for example, you'd have rugby athletes, you would have a lot of athletics, a lot of like triathletes, you'd have obviously handballers. There's a lot of them as well, and I think that. Yeah, I think obviously we would all, I think we were quite separate from the university at college. We were on a different campus so that we all were obviously integrated with each other. But that was, yeah, a lot of people who were in that accommodation were all sporting people, basically.
And what's it like for you? You mentioned you were doing your A levels there and living away, and now I believe you're doing a university degree as well, alongside you're playing for club and training international. How do you find that balance? And I guess sort of, is it nice having something else to take your focus away from the rugby as well?
So I do an international business degree at Loughborough, and I think what I do like about it is that it's completely different and it's not relatable to rugby at all, really. And I think what I like about the degree is the fact that I can just go to a lecture and switch off, I suppose, from rugby in the weirdest way possible. So in terms of managing that, I think that a lot of my timetabled lectures are in the morning, so that and then we train in the afternoon, which allows me then to do all my academics in the morning and then train all afternoon. But focus, and I'm quite diligent in terms of if even if I don't have lectures in the morning, my mornings are for work and to get work done, and to so it's from like probably like 9 a.m. till 12, which isn't too long. But if I have earlier. In order to get all my work done and all the work done that I needed to, and then in order to have the afternoon to go and train. And I think that that's probably one thing that, in terms of managing my studies, that you've just got to be a bit more, you know, a bit more better at timekeeping and a little bit more on top of things because they could really easily slip away from you.
And was it a decision you made sort of by yourself to study alongside your playing career, or was it something that was encouraged for you to do as well? Because I know having worked in elite sports setups now, there's a lot of encouragement on younger players to sort of have those dual career aspirations for whatever reason, if a career is cut short by injury or something to fall back on when they eventually do retire from the game.
Yeah, I think that it was a lot of it was my decision. I always wanted to go to university, and I think getting a degree, especially with your with doing sport, is really important, like you said, because you could have an injury which allows you not to play again, or you know circumstances could arise where you don't want to play, you don't want to pursue a professional career, and you want to go and do and go into business, or go into, for example, I'd want to go into like financial business. So then it's, I need something alongside what I'm doing in order to get me there. Because if I didn't have my education, I wouldn't be able to go and get a job in this sector that I'd want to. So I think that for me, I always wanted to get a degree, and I always wanted to be able to learn and then apply myself to something different, you know, just in case that if, for example, I don't want to do rugby or something happens that I can't do rugby, that I actually can transfer my skills I've done into the workplace. But also, I do enjoy learning, and I do enjoy being able to apply myself to learning. And I think that that's really important when you're trying to manage both.
And are there a group of you who are all doing degrees, not necessarily the same degree, but all doing degrees, and sort of, is that quite helpful knowing that you're not the only one in that position and you can speak to other people about how they manage their time and that sort of thing?
Yeah, there is a group of us. And I think because our team is heavily based within the university, we always have the Bucks team, we have the Lightning team. I think there's a lot of us, it's pretty normal to be doing a degree within the squad. So that's always great. And I think because we're all really understanding of each other, and I think that we're all very much in a similar circumstance, which makes it kind of easier when you're trying to balance a lot of things.
And it's not the only thing you do as well. So you're not just studying, you're not just playing rugby, but you're also an ambassador for Looseheads as well. So just wondering if you could explain a little bit more about that and how that came about for you.
So Looseheads obviously is a mental health charity. And I think that, so how did that come about? So actually it was one of those, so I went to go and do a shoot with one of the ambassadors, Eloise, because they needed someone to come do it, and I was free, so I was like, okay, let's go. Went over to the shoot, really enjoyed it, had a really great time, met everyone there, came back, and then we were just with it in and out of conversations, and I was like, yes, like, happy to be an ambassador, really. And I think that it's just a really good role to actually open up the conversation about mental health. And I think it's something that should be spoken about, and something that when you speak about it, like, honesty is the best way to actually solve a problem. I feel like, I think you've got to be honest with yourself, and you've got to be able to probably tolerate the feelings that you've got in order to get over them. And I think that, I think in terms of Looseheads as a concept, I think it's just been absolutely brilliant to bring it to the game. And I think that it's allowing people to talk more, and it's allowing people to, you know, they're not on their, and you're not on your own in these situations, and that there is something out there to help.
And you're obviously still right at the infancy of your career and also general life as well. But have you noticed in the last few years that there is a greater understanding of mental well-being and mental health in sport, and sort of a greater willingness of people to actually want to not just open up, but also listen to other people as well and learn?
Yeah, I think definitely there is a greater understanding of it. And I think that it's something that is more widely spoken about now, because I think that in order to perform, you know, you've got to be able to have a good, like, be in a good mental state, and you've got to, you know, if you want to perform under pressure, things like that. And I think that that's where mental health can come into it. And I think people are so much more understanding of it now, and more conversations are being had. And so in terms of that performance aspect, and I think that rugby, sometimes you can, when you think about something, you just push it to the back of your mind and you just crack on and you try not to speak about it, but eventually that will come back. And it's just brilliant, as you know, the population is changing and the thoughts and the, you know, feelings around mental health is actually, the stigma behind it is changing. And I think that's brilliant. Obviously Looseheads use the term tackle the stigma, and I think that this is something that it was really evident in changing. And I think that having conversation around mental health, first of all, like within sport, can help with performance, can help with, you know, things like that. But I also think just as yourself, being able to speak about your mental health problems or your issues, or, you know, being able to just speak about something, is actually, you feel a lot more freeing in that. And I think that being able just to speak about things is definitely a lot easier in terms of, especially in these performance environments, to be able to perform.
I guess we saw quite a powerful example recently of Owen Farrell the men's side choosing to step away from international rugby because of the pressures of it and also a lot of the abuse he gets, which most of it is largely unfair. But I guess how important is that, that actually an athlete is willing to, yeah, put aside playing for their country to prioritise themselves? I guess how important a message is that to get across to people, that actually that your mind, your mental well-being and looking after yourself is the most important thing?
Oh, it's massive. And I think that people need probably understand the effect of their words onto athletes. And I think that's something that unfortunately does still happen. And I think that happens to all athletes. And I think that it's just so important to understand how probably the effect of people for it to stop, if that makes sense. And I think that people need to understand the effect of words that have been said to people in order to see what he did in terms of stopping and actually understanding the severity of what they've said.
Mm-hmm. And as a young player yourself, I know people 10, 15 years ago, when they were coming up through and getting into international sport, there wouldn't have been necessarily that much focus on looking after your own mental health, your own mental well-being. But as a young player coming in, do you find that actually your club and your international team is prioritising that for you? And how does that sort of, yeah, come about?
No, definitely. I think that that's something that is prioritised. And I think there's a lot of us, like a lot of things that they're there to help you. And I think that within club, you have a psychologist, same within international pathway. And I think that, you know, just having the opportunity to reach out if you needed to is something that's great. And I think that that is really widely accessible within the squads.
I guess we've covered a lot in this interview. I've certainly really enjoyed it. A lot, as we mentioned, a lot is going to happen for you, hopefully, and for women's rugby in the next few years. I guess sort of touching on something we've already spoken about, but how excited are you for your own future, but also the future of women's rugby, of women's sport? And yeah, where do you think sort of we can go from here, and what would you like to see?
I'm really excited. I think that there's a really good opportunity to be taken over the next few months, years. And I think that that's something I'm really excited for. But what I'm actually really excited for is just this is the growth of the game and to see how far we can get and how far as a collective we can see the game being and where it is in 5-10 years time. I think that's something that's really exciting for the future.
Certainly is. And yeah, as already mentioned, Alistair and I are massive fans, been supporting women's rugby for years, and it's amazing to see sort of how many people are getting involved and getting invested. And we're also very excited for your career as well coming up. Obviously a lot's being spoken about you and a lot of positive things. A lot of people are very excited, so we wish you all the best and thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, I think we can all agree that despite her young age, Lily is already a fantastic speaker. She certainly kept me hooked throughout that entire interview. She's just as impressive off the pitch as she is on it, and we can't wait to see how her career unfolds. And that hopefully starts with a senior England debut in the not too distant future. Thank you once again to Lily for her time and to Talent Athlete Group for their help in setting up the interview. We'll be back next week with what I promise is a very special episode on a topic we've never covered before. In the meantime, make sure you've subscribed to Sportspill wherever you get your podcasts and follow us across social media using the handle @SportspillPod.